Good morning. Welcome, everyone. Before we start, could we have the safety contact from Mr. Lavin, please?
Good morning. Today's safety contact is on holiday fire hazards. Many of us have already decorated for the holidays. For those of us with Christmas trees, please be reminded that a beautifully decorated Christmas tree can also be a deadly fire hazard. Christmas tree fires are infrequent, but when they do occur, they are serious. According to the NFPA, fire departments respond to an average of 230 home fires caused by Christmas trees each year. The result was a yearly average of 6 deaths, 22 injuries, and $18.3 million in property damage. Here's a list of holiday fire safety tips from the NFPA. When choosing a tree, look for a tree with fresh green needles that don't fall out. Brownish needles mean that the tree is dried out and more prone to catch fire. Water your tree daily to prevent it from drying out. Check the manufacturer's labels to ensure you use lights and decorations that are flame retardant. Look for a nationally recognized testing laboratory, such as Underwriters Laboratory, to ensure lights are in good working order. Keep your tree at least 3 feet from any source of fire, such as a fireplace radio or candles. Always turn off the lights on your tree before going to bed and leaving your home, and make sure that you have a working fire alarm in your home. In the event of an emergency, the exit doors are to my left and right behind me. We will meet across the street in the National Museum. If anyone needs an AED, it's located in behind the guard shack, and there's fire extinguishers strategically placed throughout this building. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lavin. I'm told we need a Virginian before we can approve minutes or agenda, so let's just move forward with the presentations. The first will be Mr. Lavin's going to give us an update or a briefing on the decoupling that occurred a few days ago.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's okay. That'll be followed by a final briefing on the derailment that occurred. And here's our Virginian. So let's, if I may, ask for approval of the agenda.
So moved.
So moved. Without objection, and the minutes. I'd like to have the minutes approved, please. Could I have so moved? Without objection, the minutes are approved. All right, Mr. Lavin, please go ahead.
Okay, we're going to talk about the uncoupling incident that occurred at Twin Brook Station. I'd like to point out that this incident is under investigation. This is a preliminary statement of facts. At 9 a.m. on December 12, 2016, train 101 left Twin Brook Station heading outbound toward Shady Grove. The train experienced an emergency brake application due to an undesired uncoupling occurring between the second and third car. Prior to the incident, the train left Brentwood Yard that morning at approximately 7:13 hours and went into revenue service at Glenmont at approximately 0800 hours. It had not yet completed its first full trip to Shady Grove when the failure occurred at Twin Brook. After the pull apart, a portion of the seventh and the entire eighth car was still abreast of the platform at Twin Brook when the train came to rest. The passengers aboard the rear sixth car of the train were discharged to the platform by a responding ARTRA supervisor. That evacuation began at 09:14 hours and lasted for 4 minutes. There were three passengers aboard the two lead cars that were stranded within the interlocking area. Two of the customers were assisted from the train by responding car equipment employees and escorted back to the platform at 9:16 hours. That evacuation lasted approximately 8 minutes. The employees involved in the evacuation did not follow proper protocol for the evacuating passengers to the right of way, as power to the third rail was still on, nor did they use an evacuation ladder. Chris, can you go to the next slide? The remaining individual on the lead car was an elderly female who was discharged at Rockville Station. Once the lead two cars had resumed movement toward Shady Grove, and they arrived at Rockville Station at approximately 9:30 hours. The actions of and the communication between ROC personnel and responding employees are being reviewed. Post-incident activities identified that a manual uncoupling mechanism on car 7219, which would be the third car in the consist, was found secured in the open position. It should have been in the closed position. An immediate 7K inspection was completed, and the manual uncoupling devices on all those cars were found to be in the correct position. In addition, SAFE is working with both vehicle maintenance and rail transportation and operations training personnel to develop a lessons learned document that will be distributed to all train operators and vehicle maintenance personnel to ensure they are aware of the proper position of the manual uncoupling mechanism. The incident cars 7219 and 7135, second and third cars, were were last coupled together on December 11, 2016 at approximately 18:30 hours, which is 14 hours and 30 minutes prior to the incident, and that occurred at Brentwood Yard. Maintenance records of the consist are being reviewed. However, one maintenance record reviewed thus far indicates that car 7219 had been shopped on November 23, 2016 due to a problem with its electrical uncoupling circuit. It was returned to service on November 28th with no cause identified for the defect, nor could the defect be replicated. So we're still investigating that aspect of the incident. The cars involved are out of service pending inspection and download of the video and VMS data. The vendor was Kawasaki Car Equipment Engineering, Car Equipment Maintenance, and Safe Personnel are all working cooperatively to investigate the vehicle-related aspects of this incident. Safe Personnel has already interviewed some of the key witnesses involved in this, and we will continue to interview additional witnesses as warranted. That concludes my update on this.
Thank you, Mr. Lavin. You mentioned downloading a video. What is the status of that, and when do you expect to have that?
I touched base with Car Equipment Engineering. They expect to give us a preliminary report by the middle of next week.
Uh-huh.
But the video would be the car-borne video, so you can see the front and back of the and the interior of the cars.
Why does it take that long just to download it? Do you know?
It's not necessarily the download itself. It's the full analysis of the VMS data as well. I'm sure I could get the video if I request
okay.
it soon.
And you mentioned that you notified the NTSB. Did they respond in any way by sending a person or an investigator?
They did not respond, but I spoke to one of their representatives directly, and I had a conversation with them, and I updated them to our findings.
Oh. Okay. Do they anticipate further involvement?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. All right. Now, are there other questions from anyone on the panel? Mr. Lobby.
Just a couple of questions. The FTA was notified. Did they send somebody to investigate the incident?
Yes, they contacted me immediately after the incident. They also participated. Yesterday we did operational testing at Greenbelt Yard, and they participated in that as well.
This is a fairly unusual type of incident. Do you know if in Washington Metro's records whether we've had any similar incidents going back years of train partings in service?
I believe there was an incident back in January, but it could have been prior to that, but January is a rough time frame. It was a different car class, and I believe the findings there was that a true mechanical error had not properly occurred. But I'd have to see the actual report to research it further.
And as part of your inspection criteria, is a daily inspection done on this equipment to walk around when a train goes into service?
There's a daily safety test performed. It's done by the vehicle personnel. And from what we looked at as part of that checklist, checking this position of the handler was not included in that, so we have requested that they update
okay.
that. In addition to that, we had them produce a lessons learned that gives you a graphic that shows you the correct positions.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Mr. Goldman.
Mr. Levin, the terminology used is a manual uncoupling mechanism. Could you describe in layman's language what's the manual aspect to this?
Yeah, so when the coupler is in the unlocked position, is a hook that an arm sits in. And that position, there's a dog that comes out, and that's how you manually couple. So when it's uncoupled, it's centered. It's actually off to the right. When you uncouple it and put it in the locked position, it centers the coupling device. So it's just an arm that goes up and down, and when it's unlocked, it's hooked in the unlocked position. That's how we found it.
But there's no actual individual involvement in the coupling process of personnel?
No, typically you would use that if the electric portions weren't working to release the cars. It gives you the manual ability to unlock the two cars from each other.
Is there something that someone would visually see if it was not manually coupled? Is there visually, something that sticks up that should have been down?
Yeah, that would be the arm I'm speaking
yeah.
of, because that would tell you that it's in the unlocked position. But you could see that the two couplers would look like they were faced up and properly locked. That is difficult to identify. So that's why you need to look at the position of this arm to verify that you have a true mechanical locking.
And Mr. Lobby was asking you about the WMATA Metro history of such uncoupling. From your experience with the New York subway systems, How rare is this? Is this something that occurs once every 6 months, or once a year, or what's the level of incidence of uncoupling of a moving train?
It does occur. It's relatively rare. I think possibly once every 2 years or so. I've seen this in New York. Generally, it occurs in a yard when they don't make a proper ad. I have seen it in New York on a main line, but once again, it's generally a train that had recently come out of a yard that was not correctly manually coupled and was not identified.
And finally, is there anything that relates this uncoupling experience to the 7000 series cars?
I don't think it's unique to the 7000 series cars because the 6000 series has the same type of coupler. So it's more a function of doing a proper inspection and a proper ad.
Thank you.
So just briefly, I know the investigation is ongoing, but what are we thinking thus far about our evacuation procedures and maybe making those a little bit clearer? I continue to be a little bit troubled that, you know, we get sort of some of these stories that come out about people who are put in danger without WMATA personnel as they are evacuated, and I know that there's always a different dimension to the story as you've outlined, but do we have any preliminary sense of what we could do a little differently?
We're reviewing the standard operation procedures to see if they're, you know, practical and sensible. So we are looking at that, and I understand your concern. I really need to collect more information before I can speak further.
Are there other questions from anyone on the committee or here? Seeing none, I think we can move to the next presentation, Mr. Lavin.
Pat gives his presentation, I wanted to give an update on the three reviews that we've been doing since the derailment at East Falls Church on July 29th. In the days following the incident, I was briefed on some of the early statements taken by the Metro Safety Department investigators who interviewed track inspectors as we reached for the root cause, as we searched for the root cause of the derailment. Based on some of the comments made by the Metro employees regarding inspection activities, I felt it was necessary to refer the matter to Metro Transit Police for their review, which I did on August 18th. We also sought advice from external law firm with criminal investigation experience who worked with Metro General Counsel to review this matter. Finally, the incident investigation led by the Safety Department continued and worked in full cooperation with the NTSB, the FTA, and Metro's operations and administrative personnel. The NTSB issued their findings on December 1st, including the release of some of the statements that were provided to the Safety Board. As I previously stated, they are among the statements that which led me to call in the police. The Metro Police has now completed their investigation. While no arrests were made, prosecutors were briefed on the findings and are taking the matter under advisement. Metro concluded its safety investigation is wrapping up our internal administrative review after evaluating track inspection reports dating back 3 years. The internal review determined that certain employees in the track department falsified track inspection records. I want the board to know, I want the customers to know, and I want our employees to know that this review revealed a disturbing level of indifference, lack of accountability, and flagrant misconduct in a portion of the Metro Track Department, which is completely intolerable. Further, it is reprehensible that any supervisor or mid-level manager would tolerate or encourage this behavior or seek to retaliate against those who objected. It is also entirely unacceptable to me that any employee went along with this activity rather than exercise a safety challenge or any other multiple avenues available to protect themselves, their coworkers, and the riding public. Since the derailment occurred, we have either taken action or are in the process of taking disciplinary action involving 28 individuals. This represents nearly half of the track inspection department and includes both management and frontline employees. The disciplinary actions taken to date include termination of 6 employees, 4 track inspectors, and 2 supervisors. 6 more track inspectors are pending termination or unpaid supervision, and 10 additional track inspectors are pending possible discipline pending the outcome of administrative process. Another supervisor termination is underway, and 2 more supervisors are pending the outcome of an administrative process. One superintendent was demoted to supervisor, one assistant superintendent was demoted to superintendent, and one assistant superintendent separated from Metro before the review was completed. In addition to these disciplinary actions since derailment, every interlocking has been inspected. We have gotten 6 FRA-trained outside track inspectors on property, and they're embedded with our track inspection program. We're doing refreshing training courses for track inspectors conducted by the University of Tennessee. We've gotten outside experts, and we've commenced a condition assessment of the entire track system, including yards, full 261 miles. That'll be completed in the spring of 17. We are revising the track manual, the entire track manual. Some of this came from the peer review that we had done prior to this event, as you know. And it should be noted that basically a lot of what has come out of NTSB, and also peer reviews are also being part of the preventive maintenance program that we proposed. So I'll turn it over to the Chief Safety Officer to give more details on both the what caused the event and the actions we're taking.
Mr. Weave, would you take some questions before we go to the thorough?
Yes.
Thank you for the information. It's a lot to take in all at once. A couple of questions, and there may be others who have questions as well. Help me with this. The Metro Police investigated and had charges which have been referred to a prosecutor. Is that what you said?
No, they did not bring charges, but they brought their findings.
To the prosecutors who are looking at it.
Yes.
And there's a time frame on this or not?
We're wrapping up our portion of it,
uh-huh.
but, these things can stay open for a while.
And the prosecutors are... are they with the...
I don't have the exact numbers, but we've obviously contacted them.
All right, so we don't have a time frame on that. You mentioned 28 employees affected. Many apparently were terminated or about to be. How are you making up the gap for the 28 employees that
sure.
are not on
what
the
board? What we've done is we've used some of our own personnel. We've brought in outside contractors to do that in the meantime. Obviously, we're recruiting at the same time, but we want to recruit and train them exactly the way we want it. We continue to do the twice weekly inspections of the entire system.
I trust you'll keep us informed as this progresses.
We will. This is an update of
yes.
where we are now.
Yes, no, I understand.
As it evolves, I'll let you more.
Other questions from members? Yes, Ms. Hudson.
Just for clarification, what percentage of our track inspectors does this group make up?
The entire department's around just under 60 people.
Any other questions, Mr. Dorsey?
And just with that, when you get to the systemic problem that you're describing affecting almost half of a department, are you confident that your net is cast wide enough to include all of the bad actors?
We're actually doing that across the board, the entire agency. We've involved a number of third-party entities to help us with that. As you know, I've created a new group called Quico that basically does oversight now as well that reports directly to me. They're not under Mr. Leader here, and obviously and Pat's office is also engaged with all activities across every aspect of what we do.
And you described the terminations, the pending terminations, the demotion. Can you just give us, without violating personnel confidentiality, the range of other disciplinary measures that you're imposing or looking to impose?
Not right now.
Okay.
A lot of that's still being worked through
okay.
the process.
Yes, Mr. Lobby.
I don't want to. I know your investigation continues, but is there any semblance of why this took place? Is it individuals, or is it coming down from management, or what?
Yeah, I think it's a systemic issue that has evolved over years. It does. It gets to some of the root of the culture issue.
And these individuals that were supposed to be inspecting track and were not inspecting track, what were they doing during this time when?
Again, that is part of the entire investigation. And
okay.
Some of the,
and we'll be updated on that later.
Yeah, and then it's tied to some of the discipline. So
okay. Thank you.
Open if I could.
Anyone else? Seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Weaver. Would you make your notes available to the board in some fashion?
Yes, I will.
Thank you. Mr. Lavin.
I'm sorry about
yeah.
that. This is the safety investigation. It's separate and apart from the administrative piece of this that was being conducted internally. Okay, the incident at East Falls Church, the derailment occurred at approximately 06:14 hours on Friday, July 29th, was an outbound Silver Line train 602, six-car consist made up of 4 3,000 series cars and 2 5,000 series cars. It derailed at the East Falls Church interlocking. The train was crossing from track 1 to track 2. The rear truck of the number 4 and the front truck of the number 5 car derailed. There were 63 passengers that were safely evacuated to the roadbed. 3 of the passengers reported injuries. 1 of those individuals was transported to the hospital. Damage costs were estimated to be $860,000. When we did the investigation, we didn't just look at track. We looked at the other system components. There were no causal factors related to the signal system, the rail vehicles, the power distribution network, the train operator's actions, the rail operation control center, or fatigue. What we did find as the... What we did find as the causal factor was a wide gauge track defect. Essentially, the ties were deteriorated to a state where they could no longer restrain the weight of the train, and it resulted in a wide gauge drop in derailment. Next slide. What we found is that it was a failure to maintain the interlocking to track and structure standards. It was a failure to effectively assign and supervise special track work inspections, and a failure to properly classify and escalate defects. Following that, and the GM touched on this earlier, we did a special inspection of all 66 mainline interlockings, and that was performed by a multidisciplinary team. It consisted of track maintenance personnel as well as track engineering. Track supervisors performed a verification of the priority one defects in the system to ensure that they had not escalated to a black or a safety and ensure that we were taking the appropriate safeguards for those conditions. And we also did a supervisory inspection of curves with a radius of less than 1425 feet. And those are the sharpest curves in the system where you would experience the most damage. We also did a walking track inspection process review meeting held with all track inspectors. We issued them a new track inspection form. One of the deficiencies we found is that when they would list the defects on the old form, it wasn't necessarily 100% clear where in that crossover that defect resided, so we updated the form to get greater clarity. We also reinforced the requirement to inspect interlockings on a 2 times weekly basis. The prior practice to that was to just walk the straight tangent track and not go into the crossovers, so we ensured that they were aware of that requirement. We also gave them re-instruction on the monthly detailed interlocking inspections. What are the requirements to do that? What measurements need to be taken and how it needs to be performed? In addition, we added new track inspection requirement to add layers of additional protection into the process. Track supervisors must inspect any new speed restrictions immediately. Assistant superintendents must inspect at least the 30 top priority defects per month. And the superintendent must inspect the 3 top priority locations per week. As stated by the GM earlier, we also have an expert process review in place. We brought on 6 FRA trained track inspectors to provide an external consultant report, which I believe they give us weekly updates on what their progress is and what they're finding. Now, the intent of this is multi-tiered. It's to build a high-level inspection schedule to include walking and automated inspections. That's one of the things that we had in New York is we had a schedule by week, what sections need to be done and how much work, so this way we could get a more formalized process. We're documenting the frequency and quality compliance as they walk with the WMATA teams in the field. So they're not only there to assist the track walkers, they're there to mentor them and help them understand their responsibilities at a higher level. These experts provide us with weekly written reports to executive leadership, and they're remaining embedded with our teams for at least 4 months. There's other relevant actions that are taken. Prior to the East Falls Church derailment, we had brought in APTA here, and they did an assessment of WMATA's track inspection program, and they provided us a list of recommendations that were acted on at that time. In addition, we brought in track inspection training from the University of Tennessee. They provided us with 3 refresher-level training courses. Those occurred in September and October of 2016. We also have a 10-month contract to build a track walker training program, which was awarded. That's going to focus on pre-testing for the position, certification, refresher training, supervision, and quality controls, instructor certification, and auditing of the first training class. We also had a, we have an ongoing, system-wide track asset condition survey that's occurring, that's scheduled to be completed in mid-year of 2017. The FRA trained inspectors who are doing this asset will inspect 100% of the mainline track. Inspection results will be used to rebuild the track inspection database and drive future maintenance planning. A contract was also awarded on July 21st to rewrite the WMATA track inspection manual, and that's expected to be completed in spring of 2017. SAFE provided 14 recommendations to operations. They're listed herein. If you want to ask any questions about them, feel free. We will be monitoring those recommendations as well as recommendations made by the FTA and NTSB to ensure that all the corrective actions take place. And we will revise and reassess our corrective action plans as needed. Does anyone have any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Lavin. That was an excellent briefing and excellent job on the whole accident investigation. I have a question on one of the slides, other relevant actions, the contract awarded on August the 5th. It's a few slides back. You mentioned the contract, that's the one. You mentioned the contract awarded on the 5th to that FRA is going to be looking at. Then there's a contract on July 21 to rewrite the manual, which will be expected completion. I assume that there will be interaction between these findings, that what the FRA turns up on their inspection, they can feed into the, is that right? Nodding, you're nodding yes, or am I making yes?
I don't know if we've consciously said the asset survey will feed the training. But typically, anytime you find deficiencies that are not being identified, that becomes part of the training tools. Okay. So it wouldn't just be for that condition survey. It'd be for anything we found that was problematic, we would incorporate that into the training.
Well, I would understand. I hope that would be the case. I was just concerned about the timing. If one is coming in early 2017, the other is mid. So I just didn't want any information to be lost in the process. Okay. Other questions from the panel? Mr. Bolger.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I remember when this happened, I asked a question about the Mad Max machine, as I call it. It's not in here. Where's the $8 million machine that we bought for you guys and supposed to be working?
I believe that might have been in the bias. If I omitted it for the slide, I apologize. But what's being done with the TGV vehicle is that has been used now to run through crossovers, and we're verifying that they're doing that. So I apologize for not having it on the slide.
So it's actually doing the interlock?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Ms. Hutchins.
I think I asked this question before, and I'm going to see if I can help target where it is. When I saw this first report of the derailment, I thought of an offload that had occurred, and I can't remember, but I do think somewhat in that time frame, in somewhere in that area between the East West Falls Church. And what came to my mind was there a relationship of that before or after? And I'm not sure which it is. So I'd like to talk to you to help me identify some dates and what happened, because my first thought was that, wow, we actually were offloaded. The train operator was very clear that there was a problem, and that was taken care of, we thought. And so I wanted to know, did we miss something, or was this post or pre of this incident?
I believe when you asked the question, it was back in August. And I believe I had my staff go back. Mm-hmm. They reviewed all the rail disruptions that occurred on that line that day. We did not find that rail disruption that you're speaking of. And I believe we responded back to the board, but I could check on that. So
okay. It was during the time which the problem we were having, can't remember that part, but we were all offloaded. We had to go through McPherson, which was completely, crowded and that kind. So when our train came, that's the problem we had when we got into the East and West Falls Church. But we can have that conversation offline. Yeah. But I wanted to, my point being, in those reviews, do we look, as you said, you went back on a regular basis to see what has happened along that track line to associate it with that particular incident? That was the purpose.
I just believe that's, I don't doubt it happened. I just believe that specific incident might have been related to a different event.
Yes, Mr. Augustine.
As I listen to this, I'm concerned that we, and I'm appreciative of the fact that they've come up with some findings that are very disturbing, obviously, and that they're doing that. But as a board, I feel that we have to come up with, and the safety committee is the right place to do it, to have good tools to be able to really verify and check some of what this is. And the reason that I say that is because we've heard in my tenure, at least here, we've heard about issues and concerns. And then you come back and it seems like they weren't addressed, similar to the systemic issues that Mr. Wiedefeld said. And I think that for us, as from an oversight standpoint, we need to come up with some way to check that, to exercise our responsibility. I'm not exactly sure how, but I think that that's something that's very important because we can hear it from them, but there's got to be a way for us to be able to kind of backstop that, because right now I don't feel as though we actually have the mechanism to do that. I'm not sure how, but I just feel that we need to be able to do that.
Just so I understand you, you're looking for the board to be able to do what? I'm not quite clear.
So we've heard about issues, problems, deficiencies for my tenure here for the last 18 months, okay? Before they came, we heard them too. I guess that's really what's echoing for me is that before we heard about the issues and the problems and there were discussions about the fixes and, you know, and but then we are now hearing that they weren't actually happening. So we had an issue with the derailment. We had an issue with the TGV, as Mr. Bulger mentioned, inspection reports. We had all of those things, and we were told that they were addressed 18 months ago, but apparently they were not, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, we were told that, but I don't feel that we actually had a way to sort of check on that beyond trusting what the staff was sharing with us, and that I don't feel there was an independence or something like that, and that this continual process of us having this, I feel good about what they're saying, but we have to be, my thinking is that we have to have a way to in essence, check it. I mean, I don't know if we need to have some independent for us, that we have something that's independent that's checking on this, but I just feel like we must. I mean, this is very disturbing for me, at least.
So you're thinking of an IG function, it sounds like to me.
Some or a Metro sort of Rail Safety Commission.
Something independent that we...
The MSC.
There you go.
Madam Chairman, no, I think this is an issue that we've talked about in the broad spectrum, which is a safety culture question that we keep coming to. The fact is that, yes, we keep having, you know, a Groundhog Day number of issues about things that we find, we get a good report out, and then we have a similar issue pop up some period later. And I think Mr. Augustine's, I guess, question sort of speaks to, and I think Mr. Dorsey ultimately spoke to it as well. We actually need a function beyond this committee to actually come back and report back to progress as to not only that individual circumstance that caused a problem, but how we are sort of dealing with this and sort of the long tail of how we have an undergirding solution to make sure that we're not sort of, you know, bumping our heads on these issues time and time again. And I can appreciate Mr. Augustine's frustration about this, but I think it does speak to what we do as a committee, safety committee, how we sort of think about checking and building this, the underpinnings of the safety culture change that Mr. Wiedefeld is working so hard on. And I think that's ultimately our problem here. And if it's going to be the MSC, if it's going to be some type of IG function, it's going to be either some type of a small, you know, strike force, which actually has a timeline of these issues that we come back and report to, making sure that the policies that are newly written are followed. I completely agree with the members here. We need additional accountability to make sure that the staff, after senior management makes these changes, doesn't walk away from these processes. And I think that's the reason why we feel such a level of discomfort. We know our team is doing the right thing, but it seems that once we get below that one or two additional layers back to folks that are on the ground, these policies become dead letters once again, and we have the same problems. And I think ultimately we need to figure out what that process or that group is going to be. Otherwise, I think we're going to continue to have these problems.
Thank you. Mr. Dorsey.
I would certainly like to associate myself with the last two comments. And to that end, you know, as we think about contextualizing this a little bit, and Mr. Lavin, can you talk about your experiences? Is the level of continuing what seems to me to be remedial education, instituting layers of supervision going to the superintendent level, bringing in outside consultants, is this normal with track work of this kind? Do we see this in other places, or are we special and not in a good way?
Well, I'll let Joe answer the track question piece. But I can tell you this, before you get to a safety culture, you need to get to an accountability culture. And that's for every employee in the organization, from the GM down to the ground level. So unless we have that, you're never going to get to the safety piece.
Mr. Leader? From a track piece, I would say, I know in New York we have brought in some outside people at times to help create a more robust inspection program. I think what we've done and what we are trying to align here is get more of our engineering department aligned. I think, as I mentioned before in prior meetings, we are looking to go to video technology in the future where a lot of the large railroads are going. So I think we're looking to improve the program. I don't say it's an anomaly right now that you see somebody from the outside. I think we need it right now to...
I'm not questioning it. I'm just wondering if other people experience the same issues.
They have. Okay. And I think that's the reason why, like, the University of Tennessee exists, you know, so that they're there, that they can, you know, lend the outside assistance, you know, when needed.
Mr. Lavin.
Thank you. Interesting discussion. And I don't necessarily agree that, you know, outside assessments are necessary because, in my opinion, the issues that are revealed today, the issues with non-inspections, are basically pretty obvious to anybody who goes and looks. We can have, you know, FTA in here, we can have NTSB in here, we can get IGs in here, we can have other independent looks at the system, but frankly, and until Washington Metro starts looking at themselves on a consistent basis, until they put together a quality control program or whatever you want to call it, efficiency testing program, and go and actually go out and look to see what people are doing themselves, I don't think you're really gonna solve this issue. It can't be about somebody looking over your shoulder. The people that have to fix this are the people boots on the ground. They have to know that they're responsible for this. They have to know that they're responsible to their managers, to all levels of Washington Metro. And that's really where the problem has to be fixed. Anyone who went out and looked at the condition of the right-of-way, compared it to the track inspection reports, could say there's something wrong here. And we've done this over and over again. We've looked at operations. We found people that don't know what speed limits are. We've looked at track. We found that defects are left in place for long periods of time. It's got to be fixed within. And getting another set of eyes or hiring another consultant, and we have a bunch of them here already doing some of this, but bringing them in is not really going to get us where we want to be until the boots on the ground actually take this seriously and start doing what they're supposed to do. And Washington Metro has a way to go out and provide oversight of those activities at a level that gives us assurance that we're getting the work done, we're getting the inspections done.
Just following up on Mr. Lobby's comment, which I completely align myself with, I think this isn't an issue of not recognizing our problems. It's the issue of actually following up, solving them, and creating a systemic process to make sure similar problems don't happen in the future. But with that, you know, from an FRA perspective, Mr. Lobby, I think what Mr. Lavin said is until you have an accountability culture, you ultimately can't build your safety culture. Is there anything that the FRA or others that in your expert opinion would suggest of how we could better tighten down on this accountability, on these safety issues in a way that maybe WMATA is not doing? Because I think I agree with Mr. Lavin. Until we figure out what is the price to make the staff actually follow the rules every single time, I think that may be the core of why we're keeping having these problems.
You want to respond, Mr. Lobby?
I'll try to. It's a difficult situation. You can look at your safety statistics. You can look at the number of things that happen. You can look really at the number of close calls, because the close calls are really indicative of what may happen moving forward, and I think we have a lot of examples of those. But you need to measure performance there. The role of oversight, whether it's an independent IG that comes in and takes a look for a couple of months or a year, whether it's FTA, whether it's FRA, these guys, they come and they look to see how you're doing. I kind of compare them to the umpires at a baseball game. You know, they can call the balls and strikes. They can tell you if you're safe or you're out. But the people on the field have to play the game. And the people on the field are the staff here at Washington Metro. They have to play the game. They have to play it to the best of their ability. And the coaching has to be there to actually work with the folks and make sure that they understand what the job is and that they understand that they're actually achieving that. So, you know, this is a challenge for FRA. You know, we know what organizations need help. We go and talk to them and we try to get them to build those safety cultures, but it's not possible for any oversight agency or any independent auditor to go in there to do anything more than call balls and strikes. Really, it's got to be fixed within the Washington Metro. And I think our role as the board is to provide the support that Mr. Wiedefeld needs, Mr. Leader needs, Mr. Lavin needs, in order to fix these processes and put them in place and make sure that they're actually occurring. We talked about efficiency testing before. Those types of programs, efficiency testing for operators, that needs to be put in place for us to make progress on this organization.
Thank you, Mr. Lobby. I think this has been an interesting discussion, and I value all the comments and insights from the board members as well as from my colleague. What I'd like to do is continue to think about this for the time being. I have a thought that I'm sorry, Tony. I didn't mean to ignore you.
Thank you. I'm
going to come back when you're through.
I have a specific question. I mean, there's been a few references to boots on the ground and players. I want to talk about resources. I think I understand pretty clearly from the general manager's intro how we're bridging the gap based on the personnel actions. But I look back at the FTA's report on traction power electrification system, their investigation, and it clearly suggests that we're under-resourced and under-resourced pretty dramatically. So I guess I'd like to hear what resources you all think we need in the overall track inspection world that we don't have now above the 60 that I guess we've been holding at.
The in regards to traction power, we're working through that right now. And I think that was an asset that was under-resourced from the beginning because it wasn't looked at as, especially cables and third rail, it wasn't looked at separate assets and who would maintain that. We're working through that. In regards to the inspections, I think we're going to be looking at how we go about the whole inspection process in the beginning, whether or not the two-track inspection team is the way to go. I think what we want to do is just create a program that strengthens not only our walking inspections, but also brings in the technology piece, because technology is really important. The information we get from the track geometry vehicle, the information that we can get from video inspections is stuff that's really important. That's where we want to go in the future. And I think it's we've already met with an outside a vendor on their product, and we're hopefully going to see if we could perform a test very soon with the video technology and see what that brings to. But it's really about the whole program. It's just not relying on the actual walker itself. You need people with boots on the ground, without a doubt. But you want to enhance it with the technology.
I understand that, but that's not really my question.
Okay.
You're talking about technology and process, which are, you know, two or three legs of the stool. I'm asking about numbers and resources. Do you think at this point you need more resources and boots on the ground to do that work?
I think we need more resources on the power side than I need on the track side.
Okay.
Okay? And what I need to do is we're going to relook at the track inspection program, see what the finite number is. But I don't think we need it there. I need it more on the power side.
So when do you think you'll conclude on that assessment?
In the next few months.
Okay. So I want to make sure that we connect it to actually the budget deliberation.
You got it.
Thanks.
Very good. Thank you. I was going to say, I think Mr. Wiedenfeld has demonstrated his commitment to building a safety culture. He's taken some fairly significant and difficult actions. There are more to come. I think we're right in the middle of this right now. I appreciate the thoughts about analysis and oversight. I think we have an awful lot of eyes on us, and until we know exactly what's needed, I wouldn't care to add any more. That doesn't mean we don't need them, but at this point, I just want to get through with the process we're in now, see how it shakes out, see what the final conclusions are, and then think about this again. I'm not dismissing it, but I think it's interfering right now with other priorities, which we need to address and we need to get through. I do want to thank you, for Mr. Wiedenfeld, for coming to us and briefing us. I know this is a difficult time, and I think it's not over yet, so I will... would be interested in further updates for sure, and we'll follow this as a committee and as a board till it's done. That said, I think I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you. Without objection. Meeting's adjourned.